Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Monday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for you as usual. We start with the good, and if you haven't read The Morning Jolt yet, shame on you, but you still have time. And the lead story there is Jim's explanation of the latest revelation of the NSA, and that's employees digging into the backgrounds of their significant others or love interests and trying to find out as much as possible. Pretty sure that's not covered in the law. Bob Corker, Republican of Tennessee, is the top Republican on foreign relations, commenting on NSA as well on Fox News Sunday with Chris Wallace. Here's the point-blank question that started it from Chris Wallace, and then more elaboration from Corker in just a moment.
Do you feel that you actually know what the government is and isn't doing in surveilling Americans?
No. I mean, I don't think there's many people. There are many people that work harder than I do. I'm not on the Intelligence Committee, and obviously they are privy to information that I am not, but absolutely not. This is in front of us. We are not in front of it. And every day there are stories, as you just mentioned, that are leaked out. The American people want to know that those of us who are elected, Elliot and I, understand fully what's happening here. I don't think we do. I would imagine there are even members of the Intelligence Committee themselves that don't fully understand the gamut of things that are taking place.
He was on with Elliot Engel, Democratic Congressman of New York. That's the Elliot he referred to. But, Jim, good for more people sounding the alarm here on national television. We'll see if the NSA and the higher-ups than Bob Corker decide that this is worth further scrutiny as well. But the longer you keep complaining about it, the more attention they have to give it, hopefully.
It's good to see Corker getting more vocal on this. For a long while there, we're trying to say, all right, you look at the NSA as an institution and you wonder, is this something that is completely out of control, or is it somebody who's got just a few bad apples, or is this, if not a culture of corruption, then a culture of all-seeing, believing in no real limits upon their ability to snoop through the communications of Americans? Just how broad is this mentality there? And, you know, it didn't help when Obama would lie about it by saying, you know, the FISA courts are transparent. They're not. They operate in secret. It wouldn't help when he said there's no domestic spying, doing that tough, tough interview with Jay Leno. And when Clapper goes before Congress and lies. So you have the case of the politicians, the elected office, the Obamas and the Clappers, basically making false statements to Congress and to the public on this. The question now was, well, is it a bunch of bad people at the top, but good apples, you know, doing the actual work, you know, dedicated public servants who just want to keep Americans safe? The story of people snooping on their exes kind of indicates that no. I mean, we don't know how broadly this this phenomenon is. Dianne Feinstein's assuring us it was just some isolated cases. Well, by the way, if there's more than one, it's not that isolated. And then the next case is that, you know, if it has the nickname or the code name LoveInt, as in love intelligence of when, you know, NSA employees are snooping on their spouses and their ex-spouses and things like that, you kind of wonder how rare it could be, don't you, Greg? If it only happened once, nobody would think up the nickname for it. So it's good that this is staying on the front burner. It's good that Obama is getting heat from both the left and increasingly from the right on this. And, you know, almost entirely separate from the merits of the program, if it's a good program, then you shouldn't have to lie to the public about it. And this administration is just not being honest and not keeping Congress informed about it. And we shouldn't be surprised that they're running into flack, and they deserve all the flack they're getting on this.
Can't imagine some of the questions that those significant others got. Why were you driving past the cell tower on whatever highway? How do you explain that? How do you slip that into casual conversation?
Well, over the weekend, I don't know if you saw, they had NSA pickup lines, and among them were, I'd ask for your number, but I have it already.
On to martini number two now, Jim. And even though it's the bad martini, we can breathe a sigh of relief now. Apparently, we don't have a deficit and debt crisis whatsoever. The president is on his latest little economic tour. This was on Friday in Binghamton, New York. And he says, look, you know, our spending in most areas is fine. We got to tweak entitlements a little bit. But essentially, all this fury about the deficits, it's all just about Republicans hating you.
We'll still have to make some modifications when it comes to our long-term entitlement programs so that they're there for young people here when they are ready for retirement. But we don't have an urgent deficit crisis. The only crisis we have is one that's manufactured in Washington, and it's ideological. And the basic notion is that we shouldn't be helping people get health care, and we shouldn't be helping kids who can't help themselves and whose parents are under-resourced, we shouldn't be helping them get a leg up.
Jim, what does an effort to defund or delay or repeal Obamacare have to do with rampant deficits that we keep bumping into debt ceilings and credit downgrades and all this other stuff?
Yeah, I mean, we're down to the, what, 600 to 700 billion range if we're supposed to be breaking out the party hats this year? You know, this is the guy who's had at least a trillion each year. It was close to 2 trillion his first year in office. And so as a result of that, because it's been slightly less each year and down, it might not be a trillion this year. We're really supposed to be breaking out the party hats. And it's just kind of mind-boggling that this has become his mantra on this. It's so transparent. It's kind of amazing anybody can't see through it. I guess there are people who generally want to believe that the main issue in Washington is not spending too much and buying too much government than we can afford. It's not borrowing from overseas and from, you know, selling bonds. The real issue is those mean Republicans. And notice how quickly he goes to motives, and notice how quickly it basically goes down to Republicans are mean and nasty. They don't want to help, you know, old people. They don't want to help young people get good educations and all kinds of nonsense like this. More of the same. And it's kind of interesting. Obama has basically stopped engaging the opposition. That basically, I mean, part of it is that when you have a situation in which a president basically asserts that there isn't a problem, then it's hard to find a solution to the problem, isn't it? You know, right. Notice, you know, the only thing he seems to think is that there could be some adjustments to entitlements. I know when Republicans do it, it's mean, nasty, cruel, hard, you know, throwing old people into the street. When he does it, it's adjustments. So look, I'm going to bring out my own entitlement adjustment plan. Because, you know, adjustments are a really interesting new way of putting cuts. This week, I'll be going in for a hair adjustment.
The fascinating thing to me is, when did he start engaging? I remember the first healthcare summit. I believe his response to criticisms of the original Democratic plan was, "I won." So not exactly sure where the give and take attitude ever began in this administration. But at that point, he didn't have to because he had the votes. Now he doesn't, and all he can do is blame. So it's an interesting little shift in tactics there.
True enough.
All right, on to martini number three now, and Jim and I are perhaps admittedly too old to appropriately comment on this, but last night was apparently the 30th MTV Video Music Awards. I was not aware of that until this morning, and all the buzz for all you hip folks out there is the risque act, not of Lady Gaga, who apparently opened the show, but a former teen Disney star, Miley Cyrus, who was apparently doing a number of things, including this.
Okay.
Okay, that's more than enough of that. She was out there with Robin Thicke, and to show you how old I am, I always think of him as Alan Thicke's son. You know, he's the dad on Growing Pains. But apparently, through various points in her performance, she stripped down to almost nothing. And for a former Disney teen queen, this is obviously upsetting a lot of people. This is nothing new for MTV. But, Jim, it just goes to show that when it comes to degrading women, the accusers of Republicans on the war on women have it all to themselves, it seems.
Yeah, I mean, it's worth noting that you probably guess, oh, we've seen this story before. It's just like Britney dancing with the snake, and Madonna way back when in the 80s was seen as this. And Miley Cyrus has really kind of entered the Lindsay Lohan range of slow motion car wreck of serious problems, erratic behavior, suspected substance abuse or alcohol abuse and such. People have been buzzing about it this morning. I actually, you know, did watch the video a short while ago. And I had been, you know, kind of griping about kind of a tone of despair on the right, a sense of like, oh, you know, our culture is going down into the toilet. We're doomed. There's no hope for Western civilization. And they'll cite something like, you know, like a terrible, tragic murder out in Oklahoma or something, and say that based on this one incident, we can draw broad, sweeping statements about our society and our culture and the future of the human species. I do now think that we are doomed. Right? This did it. Miley Cyrus's performance with like bizarrely sexual giant teddy bears. This way, listeners, you're really, really glad we have no video for this segment because, whether or not you ever cared about Hannah Montana, Miley Cyrus, and all that stuff, it just does, you know, part of it is that you develop a certain wholesome image, and then these, you know, girls decide they want to be more sexual, and it gets, you know, really creepy and disgusting. It just got weird. And one of the things that was kind of fascinating was every once in a while MTV would cut to members of the audience. And the most cynical Hollywood stars who have probably participated in things that would make Roman emperors blush every night were watching this in shock and horror. I mean, even they, and Lady Gaga said, look, she's got problems, okay? as I understand it, Madonna said, oh, that's so, these kids today, they're just out of control. Katy Perry said it was way too sexual. You get the idea that even by the standards of Hollywood tripe, this was pretty bad and degrading and disgusting. And as with some of these other ones, you know, for a while, Paris Hilton was in this category. Lindsay Lohan really became the poster girl for this, of just this out of control behavior, an enormous amount of fame and wealth in the hands of an immature person who's just seemingly out of control and who feels the need to put everything out there. You're left sitting there thinking, like, what's left? Thankfully, MTV will find some new way. By the way, for our younger viewers, MTV used to stand for music television. there was an ancient art form called a music video. And they used to sing and sometimes have, you know, little stories that go along with the songs. And videos were a great thing back when Greg and I were growing up. Now MTV is all reality shows. And you just see people like Snooki in The Situation yelling at each other. But, you know, let me tell you, back in the days when our parents were freaking out about vulgar music videos, there was class in our day, Greg. Back in the days of, you know, Billy Joel, Bruce Springsteen, Michael Jackson, Cindy, you know, where have the Cindy Laupers gone, Greg?
It's a question I ask myself every day.
Lauper was a grown-up. At least you have that going for it. But anyway, so yeah, this just, you know, the Monday update, pop culture is every bit as bad as you feared it was.
Yeah, absolutely. And MTV is probably getting what they want out of this. Nobody really pays that much attention except when they have a crass reality show. And apparently they've got a new one coming out about teenagers who are virgins and they follow them along until they lose their virginity. So that'll be classy entertainment as well. But they'll get the butt.
You really reach the point where it's like it's really beyond parody. We try to come up with some sort of exaggerated version of it. We can't. It's now beyond even our most bizarre imagination of how ridiculous it is.
Yeah, man. Whatever happened to Dire Straits? You know, I want my MTV. But those days are gone. But Jim and I have now officially touched base with the millennial generation. They clearly know that we understand them now, and now we can reach out to them on conservative policy issues. And I'm sure that we've now opened the door for that.
It will be great for our ratings, Greg. We've now reached out to a whole new demographic.
Jim, have a great day. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
All right, see you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us again on Tuesday for the next edition of the 3 Martini Lunch.